Oh my God! These people that are being killed, they look like me. They've got blue eyes and white skin. This shouldn't be happening near where I live. Oh my goodness, someone needs to fight them. Someone needs to stop this. Yeah, conscription for all males aged between 18 to 60. Yeah, fight them back. You got to defend your borders. You got to defend your people. You got to defend your nation and state. Yeah! Oh my God. What's happening to me? Why did I just say those evil racist things? Why didn't I just say, what do we mean by male and how are we defining a male?
We shall fight on the beaches. We shall fight on the landing ground. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender.
Hello, 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 and welcome to this edition of The Jolly Heretic. Now, today I would like to talk about the new issue of our time, and that is the issue of the war in Ukraine. And specifically, I would like to talk about the possibility that despite all of the bloodshed, despite all of the terrible things that have happened, despite all of obviously it's appalling from the perspective of Ukrainian people, and quite understandably so, and obviously it's very frightening for people that live in Eastern Europe, including, you know, perhaps myself. But there is the possibility of something good coming of it, and that is a reversal in the collapse of civilization. Now, why might that happen? Well, it's become fairly obvious to us that what we're seeing at the moment is a suppression of wokeness. It's incredible what's been got away with. You had a Ukrainian deputy prosecutor on the BBC saying that we should be concerned about what's going on in Ukraine because it's people with blonde hair, blue eyes that are being killed. The BBC didn't pick him up on this. The BBC didn't say it was racist or unacceptable. The BBC didn't apologise. The BBC just let it pass. You had an ITV correspondent reporting on the trains of refugees from Ukraine, saying, my goodness, this isn't a third world country. This isn't some obscure place. This is happening on our doorstep. This is people like us. This isn't happening in Afghanistan or some third world country. This is happening in Europe, with the implication that Europe was somehow civilised and that Afghanistan wasn't, and so you'd expect these kind of things to happen there. Again, nobody commented on this. Everyone simply let it pass. It's been commented on. Indeed, you had them saying that, oh, everybody aged 18 to 60 who's a male will be prevented from leaving the Ukraine and will be conscripted into the army. Nobody commented on this. Nobody said, what do you mean by male? Does this include trans males? It was simply allowed to pass. There may well have been people that commented on this on YouTube or Twitter or whatever, but it wasn't considered very important. It was commented on in America, where the issue is less close at hand, but not in the newspapers there, such as in the Washington Post, but not in the UK, not in Europe. It's just not considered very important. Suddenly, we're not seeing articles every day about the rights of transsexuals or the rights of sexual minorities or whatever it happens to be. We're just not seeing them. Why? Because suddenly the issue is no longer very important. Why? Because we are at war. And what this is going to do, potentially, is make us more rational. What we have at the moment is a situation of extreme individualism, in which of our five moral foundations, that is to say, obedience to authority, in-group loyalty and sanctity, i.e. holiness and traditional religion and whatever, these things are unimportant. And what we stress all the time is the individualising foundations that you need if you're going to rise up the hierarchy of a group or get your own share, that is to say harm avoidance and equality. And we have stressed those to a huge extent such that they are more important than truth, they are more important than logic, they are more important than reason, such that you can be cancelled for telling the empirical truth, such that we are not interested in the empirical truth. Now, that is what wokeism basically has pushed us towards, and that is what wokeism represents. So the suppression of wokeism will push us back towards a greater balance between these sets of moral foundations. Obviously, if you have total group orientation, then you've put group orientation ahead of truth, and that's a bad thing as well. But what this could push us back towards is more of a balance, and truth being more important. Now, why is that the case? Well, in essence, we humans have what Maslow has called a hierarchy of needs. First and foremost, we need to have our physiological needs met. We need to have shelter, we need to have food, we need to have water. Once we've got those things, then we start to become concerned about safety, about property, about generally being safe. And once we, and about, you know, the food resources for the future and so on. And once, you know, the more than the immediate. And then once we've got that, then we start to become concerned about our personal status, about being respected, about people looking up to us, about that sort of thing. Now, it strikes me that what has happened over the last sort of 50 years is that more and more and more people in their formative years have been brought up in a situation in which their basic needs are met, in which there's no question of a shortage of food, no question of a shortage of their basic physiological needs, and indeed their needs in terms of safety are also met. No concerns about unemployment, no concerns about anything like that. So the result of that is that because those things were not relevant in their formative years, people become sort of decadent about those things. People are blasé about those things. People aren't concerned about those things. And so very few people, in a way that was the case in the past, are prepared to simply be content with their lot because their physiological needs and their needs of safety are met. The result is that more and more and more people are concerned with status, are concerned with respect, are concerned with individualization, are concerned with everybody sort of looking up to them and respecting them and respecting their feelings and whatever. And this is really the essence of wokeism and the essence of individualism. Now, what this situation of war does is it pushes us down the hierarchy of Maslow's needs. It means that our safety is not met. It's not met. We are unsafe. And so obviously we are going to become much less concerned about individual status, much less concerned about people respecting us, much less concerned about people addressing us by our desired pronouns or whatever it happens to be, and much less concerned about and much less open to the people that complain about those things. The people that complain about those things in a context in which the lower needs are met are seen to some extent as kind of reasonable people that want that want what we all desire, which is respect and authority and power and that individual power and that sort of thing. But in the context of war, you start, those people are at best seen as a distraction from what we need to be doing, which is fighting the war in order to ensure that we are all safe, in order to ensure that the need of safety and indeed the need of food is met. And at worst, they are divisive, they are individualistic, they are seen as selfish, they are not playing the game, they are not helping out the group in order to ensure that we are all safe. And so we have a tendency to ignore those people that talk about this, to ignore what they're saying, and even to suppress them, even to tell them that this is unreasonable. More than that, the kind of people that are concerned about those things, remember, it's neurotic type people that tend to be concerned about, you know, unhappy with the world and wanting it to be better and different and whatever. Those kinds of people, now they're not concerned about that anymore. Suddenly that's not important. Suddenly, for God's sake, they're fighting for their lives. Europe is on the brink of a nuclear holocaust. Putin could let off nuclear bombs and kill us all. And so therefore, suddenly those issues are no longer important to them. What's important is safety. And so you can see how and what's important to my cat is being let out of the room. What's important is safety, and what's important is ensuring that they survive and that sort of thing. And so you can see how, partly for Machiavellian reasons, partly because these kinds of people, they want to virtue signal, they always want to seem virtuous, and the virtuous thing until recently was signalling about not offending people. Oh my goodness me. not offending people and not hurting their feelings and that sort of thing. But then after that, the next stage is that they want to be safe. They want to ensure that they're safe. They want to ensure that they are content, and so on. So what is the next step after that? Well, the next step is that they will move towards patriotism, that they will move towards group orientation, and therefore we will become less irrational, and that we will become more concerned about truth. So that's the first thing. Now, the second thing that, of course, happens is that if you're under in a situation of considerable stress and mortality salience, which we are now in, then you tend to become higher in our kind of instincts to which we are evolved. And this is issues such as ethnocentrism, to which we are evolved to be high in positive and negative ethnocentrism, and also religiousness, traditional religiousness and belief in God, which tends to be wrapped up with ethnocentrism and other group-oriented traits. And so this again will make us more group oriented, less individualistic, and push us back towards a balance between the two, which will make us more concerned with truth. The third issue that's important then is that what war does is it basically brings about artificially the conditions of group selection. We've discussed before that until the Industrial Revolution, we were under harsh Darwinian conditions. And under those harsh Darwinian conditions, groups were fighting each other for resources and that sort of thing. And they won those fights for resources by selecting for being ethnocentric, by selecting for being highly intelligent, and therefore for selecting for the optimum level of genius. The genius is characterized by outlier high IQ combined with being moderately antisocial and moderately low in conscientiousness. This means he can think outside the box and come up with new and original ideas. He's not bound by the rules, and he's also disagreeable and autistic, so he doesn't care about offending people. He's not concerned about offending people, and so he'll present his idea, which will always inherently rock the boat. Now, of course, in an environment in which all our basic needs are met and there's no problem and there's no scepter of war, and therefore we're concerned about our individual needs, to be respected and not to be offended and to feel loved and wanted, then of course the genius is a problem. The genius goes around offending people. The genius needs to be suppressed. The genius needs to be driven out of the university. In a context of artificial recreated group selection, which is what war does, that we need people like that. We need innovators. We need creative types. We need people that are going to come up with brilliant ideas so that we can dominate the other group and not be destroyed by the other group. So what you would expect in a context of artificially created group selection, i.e. war, is that not only will people become more concerned about the empirical truth, they will become more tolerant of those that offend people, because they will kind of understand, or they'll have to understand, that on some level it is those that offend people, the Alan Turing types, the weirdos, the eccentrics, that tend to come up with brilliant ideas that then help you in the battle of group selection and help you to survive. And I don't think it is a coincidence that what you see, if you look at the history of per capita major innovation, is that it reaches a peak in around 1870, and then it starts to decline. Why does it start to decline? Because the Darwinian selection pressures for intelligence are weakening, because we have brought in medical innovations and things like this, and the correlation which existed in pre-industrial times between wealth and thus intelligence, because the two correlate, and completed fertility. The richer half of the population had about double the completed fertility of the poorer half of the population. This then, due to medical innovations and whatever, starts to go into reverse. And by 1870, it has pretty much done so, and so per capita major, we become less intelligent, and per capita major innovation starts to go down. But in about 1945, this decline goes into reverse, and it goes into reverse for approximately 20 years, and that, i.e. per capita major innovation starts to go up, and that would be consistent with a period with the Cold War, with a period of time in which there is an existential threat, in which there is a de facto, ongoing period of group selection, not a war, not an actual war, Because then it's very difficult to innovate things because you're on edge and very, very basic needs aren't met and whatever. But a Cold War. And in a Cold War, there is the potential for war all the time. And that puts you in this group selection mode. And that means you want to ensure that you survive this situation. And that would mean that you would try to innovate more and you would try to favour genius and you would be in favour of truth and all of this sort of thing. And what you see is a rise in that period, a rise, even though intelligence is still declining, even though society on some ways has become more individualistic, you see a rise in per capita major innovation during that period. And in fact, that period actually correlates with a reversal of a movement towards conservatism. A movement against conservatism. So what's been happening is society's becoming more and more and more liberal across time. In the 50s and 60s, early 60s, there's this backlash against that. Society becomes more group-oriented, more religious, more conservative, more church-going. And there's clear data on this. And then you have the early 60s, and then it goes into, it tips over, society tips over into runaway individualism. As I've looked at on this channel before, you probably get about 20% of society that is individualists, and people then go with what they see as the winning team, and we quickly flip over to individualism. But in that prior period, and then the fruit of that is, of course, borne out in the late 60s, you know, Concord, going to the moon. But in that prior period, you have this conservative backlash against the individualism and this group focus and this pressure to highlight the importance of genius. And it's the Cold War, one could suggest, that is doing that. And so I think that what we could see as a consequence of this Cold War, if it carries on, or this war, it's a real war, but if this reverts into a new Cold War, if it carries on, is a slowdown in the decline of Western civilization, is a mini renaissance, which it could be argued we saw between the 1940s, perhaps, and the 1980s, something like that. It could be something like that happens again. So therefore, one might conclude that Putin is going around threatening nuclear war, that every cloud has a silver lining. Or should that be, every mushroom cloud has a silver lining? Well, I hope this has been of interest, and if it has, then please subscribe. It helps most violently if you do that. Remember, our live show Mondays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. UK time, 2 p.m. New York. You can see ways to assist the show in the box below, and I will see you soon, and goodbye!